television.
Yeah, man. We'll burn it up, man.
Gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, Boomer Vision. That's right, Boomer Vision on Republic Broadcasting. Your boomerang for free speech. Why a boomerang? Well, because I'm not knocking, I'm ringing. And a boomerang, all right? So it's your boomerang of free speech. What goes around comes around and send badly needed fundage. Also download the Kosher Certified app. It's what you want. You don't want kosher certified food, or maybe you do, but you want to know the difference. You want to know what it's all about, and you want to know the difference. And if you think the difference is one's more healthy than the other, nah. The difference is one is raising funds for particular organizations that spend them in ways, use that money in ways that you might not appreciate. So get yourself educated on the KC, which is the kosher question, spelled in Polish. I don't know. All right. Speaking of Polish, Ukraine. So this is Boomer Vision. I'm walking the dog edition and trying to keep out of people's way edition. So here's the bottom line. The longer it goes on, the more people who die. Maybe the many, many, many more people who die. The bottom line is that the only way that Russia does not meet its military objectives is through nuclear World War III. The thing is, Russia laid down red lines along the borders of its existential threat limit. All right. Now, you might say, laying down red lines is aggressive. Well, no. The fact of the matter is that Russia has been extremely tolerant. Is that the word? That's not really the word I was looking for. They've been reluctant to engage. There's better words for this. But it is our Jewish-dominated State Department and media and power structure that's just been pushing this and pushing this and pushing this. And, you know, you can think of, let's just say some sort of unpleasant confrontation somewhere, right? And somebody might make a bunch of verbal insults, a bunch of verbal threats, and you do nothing. And then they might even, like, get in your face, really get in your space. You do nothing. They might even start pushing you around and you do nothing. Well, here's the thing. In this case, what's weird is what you have in – well, okay, and let me just finish the analogy. At some point, if you're threatening and abusing and pushing around, at some point there's going to come a time where that person is justified in smashing you in the face, even if you haven't smashed him in the face yet, because you've been pushing him and pushing. Maybe you've pushed him near the edge of a subway platform. Maybe you're pushing him to the point where he's close, you know, where he would be vulnerable to being pushed onto a in front of an oncoming train, right? And at that case, he smashes your face. Now, in this case, the analogy doesn't quite apply, because what you've got is, it's a little bit weirder than that. You've got the United States, which overthrew the government of Ukraine, installed its own puppet government. Now they've got this little Jewish comedian who is the puppet of Jewish oligarchs over there and of the Jew crew at the State Department. It's a completely Jewish affair. And they're having the Ukrainian people just bear the brunt of everything. So they're having the Ukrainian military that's just being coerced into fighting a war that it can't win. push, push, push. And in this case, the thing is, it's a war that they can't win. But it's a war that they can drag out. They can fight for longer. The only thing they get out of fighting for longer is having more Ukrainians die, more people die. It's really, really sick. And it's unfortunate that people don't understand this. But it's just, it's very, very sick that you've got these normies on Facebook who are trying to show their support for Ukraine. Why? You know, if they can't, the only way that Russia is not going to meet its military objectives is through a nuclear World War III where everybody loses. Everybody loses. There's no scenario, zero, no scenario in which Ukraine, the Ukrainian people, win anything. You know, now Zelensky himself, there's all sorts of scenarios for him. He can just get whisked out of the country, go to Israel, go to wherever they want to take him. He doesn't have nearly the skin in the game that everybody else has, that all the regular Ukrainians have. This is really sick. It's really sadistic. And that people can't understand it is really unfortunate. After all these weeks, that they can't understand that. And here we've got totally real President Joseph R. Brandon R. Trojan, who is going to request that Congress send $3 billion a month, or was it $3 billion a month or $30 billion for the year? I don't know. At any rate, just megabucks, throwing megabucks at, you know, while paying off the civil servants who are still in the country, sending all this weaponry, which is only going to result in more deaths for normal, well, for the fighting people, but also for normal people, because, you know, normal people are going to wind up dying as well. So everything is completely sick. Now, speaking of red lines, there are a lot of red lines. And the Jew crew that's running this at the State Department, they're not necessarily the brightest. You know, they're rapists, they're murderers. Some of them are presumably good people. So sending $30 billion or $3 billion a month, that's just America. Other countries are pledging all this weaponry. So what's going to happen? What are the various scenarios? What are the various things that could happen? Well, the weapons, I mean, obviously, they just are likely to extend the war, cause more Russian battlefield deaths. Is that good? And to the extent it extends the war, it means Russia has to be, it postpones any negotiated settlement, meaning more Ukrainian battlefield deaths, a lot more. The Russians would, there's a limit to how much of their own battlefield deaths that they can absorb without the public starting to sour on this endeavor. So they would necessarily have to become, and their attitudes would harden. So it would be way worse for the Ukrainian military. They'd wind up just getting completely wiped out. The longer this goes on, the more civilian suffering there is, obviously. But there's also the longer this goes on, the more opportunities there are for horrible miscalculations for all sorts of things. Like, the Ukrainians have done a few raids into Russia. And, you know, if you're fighting an interstate war, well, you know, the other side, if they've been invaded, which this is an invasion, turnabout's fair play. Okay, so it's fair, but it raises the stakes. And if they're doing this, if they're getting all of these weapons, this weaponry from the United States and elsewhere in Europe, that's allowing them to do raids into Russia, then is Russia limited in retaliating only against Ukraine? No. So there's all sorts of things that could happen. Also, in order to prevent the weapons from getting into the Ukrainian military and being used against Russia. Well, it makes sense for Russia to destroy the weapons in advance. So are they going to be destroyed? Do they have to wait until they cross the border? If these weapons are going through Poland or Slovakia or Romania and they're headed to the Ukrainian border, well, is Russia going to abstain from attacking these convoys, this weaponry, before it crosses the border? Should they? Do they have to? Will they? Do we know that? So then you've got, Poland, Slovakia, Romania, which are NATO countries, and they could very easily wind up getting bombed, having some of their, the roads to the Ukrainian border or the railroads that are taking weaponry into Ukraine, they could get bombed. So their territories could get bombed. And then what? And then what? And of course, I tend to say that things are being run basically by the Jew crew in the State Department, but it doesn't mean that they have total control over everybody. And it seems that the Jewish-run Ukrainian government itself is looking at a strategy of expanding the war. They have been trying to drag Moldova into the war. They even offered to attack and perhaps capture Transnistria, which is a region I'll talk about in just a second. Capture Transnistria on behalf of Moldova. Well, the Moldovans at this point don't want any part of it. But the fact is that the Ukrainian government, the Jewish government of Ukraine, does seem to be looking at a strategy of expanding the war, getting other countries actively involved in a shooting war with Russia. This obviously could be so easily World War III. But, Zelensky, it sounds like I don't think he's a hero. Huh. So, Transnistria. What about Transnistria? What is Transnistria? So, in the in the wake of the Russian Revolution, there was a settlement, and initially Lenin signed away all sorts of land. He signed away all sorts of land just to get Russia out of the war, gave up a whole bunch of land, and then over the next 5 years or so, wound up reacquiring a lot of the lost land. And, there was land that had been kind of temporarily lost in the Far East, became the Far East Republic. But there was a lot of land, Ukraine for a short period of time was its own independent state for a very short period of time, wound up then becoming a Soviet Republic, a Bolshevik Republic, and being merged into the new Union of Soviet Socialist Republics in 1922. There was a little bit of land. So there's the Dniester River, which ethnically, it divides the primarily Romanian-speaking region. And Moldova is basically just kind of like the Moldovan language is a dialect of Romanian. It's not really even a different language other than that when it was part of the Russian Empire and the Soviet Union, it was being written in Cyrillic letters, whereas in Romania is written in the Latin script, but the Roman alphabet. But on the other side, on the eastern side of the Dniester River, it's primarily Slavic. And in the wake of World War I and the Soviet Union kind of regaining some of these lost territories, it regained this little sliver of what had once been, it had changed hands. It had been part of the Russian Empire. It had been part of the Ottoman Empire at times. But this little sliver of land on the east bank of the Dniester River, and that's called Transnistria. Then after, and on the other side of the Dniester River was Romania, right? And then Romania was a country allied to Germany in the war. They lost. The Soviets took what became Moldova, the Moldovan Socialist Republic. They took that and merged the Transdniester region into it for their own reasons, right? So you had this area that's called Transdniester was not geographic. It was not part of politically part of Moldova until after World War II. And then when the Soviet Union ceased to exist, this area on the called Transdniester, on the east bank of the Dniester River, which was more industrial, the west side of the river is more agricultural. They immediately, this is, you're talking 1992, I think maybe even 1991, a lot was going on, but certainly in 92, immediately they declared independence from Moldova. They're on the, what you could call the Ukrainian side of the border. The people who live there, a lot of Ukrainians, a lot of Russians, the Moldova, the post-Soviet Moldova, has never ruled this Transdniester region, but because it had been part of the Moldovan Soviet Socialist Republic, they still claim it. And internationally, it's been recognized by most countries that Transdniester is being part of Moldova. But like a couple of other regions, you know, that broke off from Georgia, Abkhazia, South Ossetia, to those two. It's also been, I believe Russia has recognized it as independent. At least it has been effectively a Russian protectorate since 1992. And the population there is overwhelmingly Slavic, not necessarily all Russian, but, you know, Russian and Ukrainian. And the governing authorities and population is basically pro-Russian. And so it borders on Ukraine, but it borders on a part of Ukraine that is ethnically got a lot of Russian, maybe a Russian majority, but certainly more or less half Russian. So, and, you know, it's just north of Odessa. It's in that area. Okay, so that's Transdniester. So you can look on the map. It's just a sliver. It's a sliver right between Moldova and Ukraine. It's on the east side of the Dniester River. So there's this scheme by the Jewish government of Ukraine to try to get Moldova into the war. And if you got Moldova into the war, then you might get Romania into the war, because the Moldovans and the Romanians are basically the same people. They have almost the same flag. And at some point, Moldova, which had been part, most of it, most, well, I mean, the part of Moldova that is ruled by Moldovans, that area was part of Romania between the world wars. So there's a lot going on here, and this could easily escalate. It's very, very dangerous. What we might be on the verge of seeing is just the dismemberment of Ukraine. Because here's the thing, the target. Oh, well, it was Alexander Mercolis, whatever his name is, who was saying that, or maybe somebody, he was quoting somebody as saying that, you know, military plans always go by the wayside. Military objectives may remain the same, but the plans, how to achieve them, they go by the wayside. But here, I think even the objectives may vary. These are shifting, because up until February, all that Russia was asking for 8 years was for
consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Up until February, all that Russia was asking for 8 years was for Ukraine to become neutral, to stop bombing the Donbass, and to restore equal, you know, political and linguistic rights to Russians inside Ukraine, and in particular inside the Donbass. And it was willing and also to recognize Crimea as Russian. Now, there's absolutely no way that Ukraine could now get such a good deal, because I mean, at that point, Russia was prepared to have the Donbass reincorporated into Ukraine. Up until February, February 22nd, that was their position. They were willing to have the Donbass reincorporated into Ukraine on condition that Ukraine become neutral, that it restore political and linguistic rights to Russians, and recognize Crimea as Russian territory. Now, after that, maybe it was the 21st, when Putin recognized the Donbass, those two republics, as independent, maybe there was still, like, had the war... Had Ukraine quickly come to terms, maybe it could have. Maybe there's still a chance of reincorporating those two republics if it met those other demands. But at this point, that's long gone. So now you've got, Ukraine will necessarily lose those two provinces in their entirety. But had they given up after just a few weeks, they could have gotten that deal. But as this goes on longer and longer and longer, well, what about the land bridge between, you know, the Donbass and Crimea? Because I'm not sure, I don't have all these Ukrainian provincial names or oblast names memorized, but Donetsk does not border Crimea. There's another province in between. And so at least part of that province, which has a lot of Russians, which is probably about half Russian, that province will, at this point, almost certainly also be annexed to Russia. Russia's going to annex the Donbass when this is has all played itself out. They'll annex the Donbass, those two provinces, almost certainly annex this land. Well, certainly. I mean, like at this point, I don't think it's become explicitly stated objective, but with the Ukrainians threatening to blow up the bridge between Russia and Crimea, because Crimea is weird. It's like shaped kind of like a diamond on a deck of cards, you know? It's like a square that's been tilted 45 degrees. And at its top point, it's got the narrowest of isthmuses with what was Ukraine, I guess still is Ukraine. And on its easternmost point, it's separated from Russia by the narrowest of straits. Well, that strait has been traversed by a bridge, automotive and railroad bridge, but the Ukrainians are threatening to blow it up. And if I say it's a strait, so it's a strait between the large Black Sea to the south and the very much smaller Sea of Azov to the north. Azov, as in Azov Battalion and Azov Brigade. So the entire coast of the Sea of Azov is likely to be annexed to Russia. Then Russia has the land bridge to Crimea, right? So the and with the land bridge, it means the actual engineered bridge is less crucial. It's still vulnerable, but it's less crucial. You could still get things in and out of Crimea from Russia if you annex that part of the Sea of Azov coast. Well, now here's the thing. That only leaves a little bit of coastline, Black Sea coastline, for Ukraine. And at the far edge of that coastline is this area, Odessa. And Odessa is also just, it's kind of, I guess at one point, maybe Odessa, had it ever belonged to Romania, it looks like it's just kind of a bite out of Romania. It's just south of Moldova. It's east of Romania, north of the Black Sea. And it's largely Russian populated. And so and of course, just north of it, you'd also, if you were to annex Odessa, you'd also then have, it's contiguous with Transdniestria. So what you might wind up getting, as this goes on farther, more and more, and as, you know, Russian casualties mount, and as Russian casualties mount, then what's going to be an acceptable outcome for Russia is going to require more and more sacrifice for Ukraine. So you could very easily wind up with all of southern Ukraine, the entire coast of the Black Sea, which is largely populated by Russians. You know, all in all, it's majority Russian in the south, going all the way from, you know, the Sochi area of Russia.
Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of Happy Packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
All in all, it's the majority Russian in the South, going all the way from, the Sochi area of Russia, through Donetsk and to Crimea, and then over to Odessa, and up into Transnistria. That could all wind up being annexed to Russia, and it'd give Russia a border with Moldova and with Romania. So, this was not what Russia wanted initially. What Russia wanted initially was a neutral Ukraine that would be a buffer state. It's, Ukraine's about the size of Texas. It would be a buffer state between itself and NATO, a neutral buffer state. That was what Vladimir Putin wanted. But at this point, with everything that's happened, then the next best scenario becomes annexing a big hunk of Ukraine. And then the rump Ukraine is going to be totally hostile to Russia, you would think, but you never know. After a brutal war against Chechnya, the Chechens love Putin, so you never know. But here's the thing. So you will have you're likely to have Ukraine lose a big hunk of territory, a quarter of its territory, maybe a third of its territory, to Russia. Well, And then what? Because big hunks of what is Ukraine now had been part of Poland before World War II, or up until the end of World War II. It had been part of, Poland was dismembered in 1940. But it had been, a big hunk of Ukraine had been part of Poland. And there are Poles who live there, So what's going to happen? The Poles Will they have territorial ambitions on the disintegrating Ukraine? And Ukraine didn't have to disintegrate. It didn't have to. But the longer this goes on, the more territory it's going to have to lose. Because if Russia can't secure its security guarantees the way it originally wanted, with a large territorially integral neutral Ukrainian state, buffer state in between, well, then it's going to wind up having to annex basically the entire Black Sea coast. Okay, so that's Russia, and that's Ukraine. Now, the Jew crew that runs the State Department, they have also been globetrotting and trying to put pressure on India and China. And China, people talk about China a lot. And of course, China's throughout this recent episode, the security ties between China and Russia have grown much stronger. And China has been under all sorts of threats from the United States. You've had, in particular, from Congress, you've had, and from the former Trump administration, you had Mike Pompeo went over to Taiwan and said that the United States has to give Taiwan security guarantees. It's got to recognize Taiwan as an independent country, even though Taiwan has never declared itself an independent country. You've had a number of congressmen go over, a large number. And so there's a lot of provocation of China there. And, you know, China has a huge amount of its own territory. It doesn't really need a lot of territory. It, you know, it's funny. I was looking at an old globe. I like globes. And I was looking at an old globe that I'd salvaged from one of my friends who moved. And it was from, well, maybe from the 30s. And the China that was depicted on there, it was amazing the way they depicted China. They depicted a very large Tibet as being separate from China, much larger than the Tibet Autonomous Region, which is large. I mean, the Tibet Autonomous Region is a lot bigger than Texas. And but this, the way this was depicted on the globe, I'd never seen it like that. It was enormous. And they depicted Xinjiang as separate from China, which was odd. But of course, China itself, the internationally recognized government of Chiang Kai-shek, just really didn't control very much of the Chinese territory. And then, of course, Manchuria had been carved away from China, what, about 1931 by the Japanese and set up as an independent country called Manchukuo or Manchukuo. And pretty interesting history right there. And so what was left of rump China really wasn't very big on this particular globe. And of course, Taiwan on that particular globe was part of Japan, part of the Japanese Empire. So, but all those regions are now, they're part of China. They've been controlled by China since the founding of the, it might have taken a little bit, like a couple of years to really get control over Tibet, but they've been controlled by Beijing since the founding of the People's Republic. This business with Taiwan, and I know I've gone over it before, the Chiang Kai-shek, when he was faced with an eventual loss of the civil war against Mao, rather than admitting defeat, he moved his government and his military and whatever assets they could across the straits to Taiwan. Taiwan, which they had only reacquired 4 years earlier in 1945, when Japan lost the war, they returned Taiwan to the Republic of China, which was the name of the state that Chiang Kai-shek ruled over from his capital in Nanjing. And so I guess it was actually late 48, about 3 years later, that Chiang Kai-shek moved his capital. And I think the
the People's Republic was proclaimed in Beijing in January 49. The idea, and I know I've said it before, but the idea wasn't that Taiwan become an independent country. The idea was that Chiang Kai-shek was going to use Taiwan to regroup and as a restaging or staging area to reconquer the mainland. Well, and you know, when I was there in the early 80s, which is, you know, 30-something years later, about 33 years later, I was there, and they still, at least formally, at least outwardly, they still had that idea that they were going to reinvade the mainland and take it over. And you saw that kind of propaganda, that kind of imagery on TV and in newsreels every day. Every day. That was the idea. And the thing is, China, during those first few decades of communist rule, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, there were a number of disastrous policies. Most notably, you had the Great Leap Forward, which was an idea to industrialize the countryside and to bring agriculture into the cities so that every single region would be self-sufficient, both in industry and agriculture. Not a good move, and it led to a massive famine. And then as a result, Mao had some of his powers taken away. And then a few years later, he launched the Cultural Revolution in order to reestablish his control over the country from his political rivals. And then he died, probably of syphilis. With all that upheaval, China was a disaster. And so the idea in 1982, when I was over in Taiwan, 1982, the idea that that they might someday take over the mainland really wasn't completely far-fetched. But with the economic reforms of Deng Xiaoping, China became very strong. And so then you got this different strategy pursued by Taiwan. Also, you had Chiang Ding-kuo, who was Chiang Kai-shek's son. He became old, and I can't remember if he just died or if he got too old and resigned. But you wound up with, in the late 1980s, was it 89, I think? Maybe 88. You wound up with a Taiwanese-born president, Lee Teng-hui. And under him, you started getting a lot of economic investment from Taiwan, which was pretty successful economically. It had a lot of capital that it could export. And so you had a lot of investment from Taiwan starting in the late 80s into China, into mainland China. And so you had this period where you actually had very good relations between Taiwan and China. And the thing is, both governments always wanted reunification. It's just that, the mainland wanted it under the whole country under Beijing's rule, and the government in Taipei wanted the whole country under Taipei's rule, the nationalists. But with Chinese mainland economic development, the idea of Taiwan, the government in Taipei, the so-called Republic of China absorbing the mainland, it just became far-fetched. It became impossible. And so then you wound up with the nationalists, the former rivals of the Communist Party, being more amenable to an eventual reunification, maybe along the Hong Kong lines, where you have two systems, one country. And so you would have a reunification, but there would be a great deal of autonomy for the island of Taiwan. But you had another faction of people who typically didn't have the same kind of birth connections to the mainland. Because the thing is, the Nationalist Party the people who dominated the Nationalist Party for the most part were not born in Taiwan. Like Lee Teng-hui was born in Taiwan, but for the most part, they weren't. The Nationalist leadership was born in on the mainland and fled in 1948-49. So the thing is, the people from the mainland, while they dominated the government, they didn't necessarily dominate the economy. And the economy of Taiwan was actually had been in pretty good shape under the Japanese. And when the Nationalist Party, when they took over Taiwan, they actually were pretty brutal to the native. When I say native, I mean they're Han Chinese people, but to the the Taiwanese born people of Taiwan. The thing is, Taiwan is like 98-99% ethnic Chinese, or Han Chinese, and most of them could trace their ancestry to about the same time as like English Americans can trace their ancestry. Like, I have ancestors who came to my English side. We came to Americas in the 1600s. And, in the 1600s, Taiwan was mostly like kind of a Filipino type of aboriginal. They were related to the Filipinos, the Malays. And the colonization of Han Chinese into Taiwan really only got going about the same time as the English started colonizing North America. And so you had people coming over, mostly from across the straits in Fujian province. You had people coming over in the 16th, 17th, 1800s. And of course, they wound up becoming about 99% of the population, 98, 99. The aboriginals are only a couple percent at most. And at the end of the 1800s, the island was taken over by Japan for 50 years and ruled from Japan, and economically did very well. And so in the 1980s, in the 1990s, there were a lot of people who didn't have the recent connection with the mainland, people whose ancestors had come to Taiwan 100 or 200 or even 300 years earlier and didn't necessarily want to unite with the mainland. And the country's pretty evenly divided. You have had these elections since the late 1980s. You've had these multi-party elections. It's really two parties that matter. It's the Nationalist Party and the Democratic People's Progressive Party or something like that. Democratic Progressive Party, I guess that's what it's called, the DPP, and they've rotated in and out of office. But for the past couple of election cycles, you have had the DPP in there. They have never declared independence, but they do have that tendency. They do have that desire. But the thing is, this is none of our business, and we shouldn't be encouraging. Just like with Ukraine, there's no way we should be encouraging the DPP to declare independence, like Mike Pompeo has, like so many of these Congress people have, because it's not going to happen. China's not going to let Taiwan become independent. It will let Taiwan operate de facto independent as long as it wants, as long as it doesn't declare formal independence. And so it's like, once again, you've got, and this, I don't even know how much this is Jews. How much of it is Jews? I mean, there is probably some scheming there, and the Jews do see China as a rising power that they're going to have to contend with. In fact, as soon as they're done contending with white people and Russians in particular, then they'll probably turn their attentions more to Taiwan, to China. But there's no way that China's going to let Taiwan just declare independence. And Taiwan's a really nice place. It's, Ukraine is the most corrupt country in Europe. It's the poorest country in Europe. I'm sure it's a nice place, nice people, smart people, but it's been really, really poorly managed. Whereas Taiwan has not been poorly managed. The Chinese in the mainland have done a good job, but the Chinese on Taipei, the Chinese people who live in Taipei, they've done a very good job. It's extremely affluent, got a very high standard of living. Got excellent infrastructure. I haven't been there for over 30 years, but even when I was there, it wasn't bad. And I know it's just gotten way, way, way better. Talk to people who have been there recently. I'd like to go again. And so what the hell is this? Why are we egging on, Ukraine or Taiwan to engage in on political endeavors that Russia and China respectively will not tolerate? They won't tolerate them. These are existential threats as far as they're concerned. The last country, the United States, what's going to happen here? Can the United States even survive in a recognizable form?
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
The last country, the United States, what's going to happen here? Can the United States even survive in a recognizable form? So you've got people who were just being completely overrun with immigrants from all over the place. They're not even trying to hide it. You've had that whole COVID hoax completely destabilized us. You've got all of this anti-white stuff going on. And now, what's going to happen? Either with the war, either we're going to get into a nuclear war and get bombed, nuclear bombs, or we're going to lose. Our side's going to lose. It'll be a humiliation. We won't get bombed. That's the good part. And actually, humiliation is a good part, too. The more that this Zionist-occupied government is humiliated, the better. But then what happens? What are they going to do then to try to keep control of the situation? It's anybody's guess. It's anybody's guess. There will be more hoaxes. There will be more attacks on white people. Will Texas or Florida or Missouri or Kentucky, will any of these states declare independence or declare that their state laws trump federal laws? All sorts of things could happen. And it's really not a good situation. Of course, we've got the elections coming up. Now, here's the thing. There are elections. There's going to be fakery. The elections are a real thing, even if they're going to be faked. And, of course, we've got 2022. Those will probably happen. 2024, will they happen? I don't know. Trump's going around doing rallies. Here's my latest thinking on Trump. If you had elections, and this is an if, because we don't know. We don't know if the country's still going to exist in 2024. But let's just say you were going to have elections in 2024, and it's Trump versus whoever. It won't be Trump versus Biden, because there's no way the Democrats are going to let Biden run. And even if chlamydia is the president, they're not going to nominate her, almost certainly. You never know, but almost certainly they wouldn't nominate her. So who knows who it would be? Who knows who it would be? It'd be Trump against somebody. But and Trump does not seem to have learned any of the lessons. But if it's between Trump and some random Democrat who's going in the same direction as going to keep the same Jews in power, even though Trump hasn't learned any lessons, and his presidency will probably be just as much of a, it could easily be as much of a disaster as the first term, I would still vote for him and endorse him, even with the knowledge or the assumption that he's never going to learn how to govern and that everything will still be a disaster. I think things were better. I think it's better that he did kind of slow things down for 4 years. But also, it's just that the Democrats cheated. They faked the election. These people don't deserve to be anywhere near power. And even though, I look at the, I don't know, I'm going to be monitoring some Trump rallies coming up. But I don't think he's learning anything. And, now it's possible in 2024, if there's an election, that there might be an alternative. Maybe there'll be somebody else. But like I'm saying, if it's Trump versus whatever random Democrat, if that's a Democrat, it's just going to keep moving things in the same direction. Just because they cheated Trump out of the election for no other reason, I'd still support Trump, even though I would support him as an opponent. All right. I don't think that dog was very happy about it.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science, analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central. And Wednesday at 1 Central.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.